Mr. Dama, good morning. We've got people coming in and out, so let's give everybody a chance to get to their places. Is it Cook or Koch?
Cook.
Cook. Thank you.
Cook, I think, if you're from Cedar County, and I am, so it's Cook. May it please the court, I'm Dave...
One more time.
Sorry.
Trap. Now everybody's in place. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of the appellants who seek your decision reversing the decision of the district court, which allowed a large tract of Cedar County real estate to move from one school district to another. When this case started before the Freeholder Board, a series of petitions were filed there. The petitions used a basic form, and that basic form contained a signature section that allowed a petitioning party to sign the document and have the signature notarized. In the example, one of 232 petitions which I have placed before you, one landowner, not both, had that landowner's signature on the document, and that signature was notarized. The statute, section 79.458, requires every landowner petition, every landowner swear the document, the legal description be complete, accurate, and close, and it includes a number of other requirements. The district court decided to allow all of those freeholders to intervene and on appeal in the district court to file new petitions to cure defects in the filings made before the freeholder board. In this one example I select to show you now out of the 232, in the district court, the filing that was made looks like what you see on the left-hand side of this exhibit, which bears number 20 on it from the record. Here, no landowner signed the pleading. The document is not verified at all. The lawyer executed the document constituting the petition in intervention. Before the freeholder board, not one of the 232 petitions filed complied with the requirements of section 79.458.
What kind of a challenge did you make in front of the board, or did you make any challenge in front of the board as to those deficiencies?
Your Honor, we did not make a challenge to the deficiencies before the board because the burden, of course, is on the petitioning party. And as a matter of fact, there is the statute doesn't even necessarily contemplate an adversary proceeding at that level. It does permit any taxpayer of the affected district to appeal to the district court, which is what we did.
Your point is it's jurisdictional?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe it is under your previous decisions. We think that Section 79.458 prescribes what a petition before a freeholder board must contain, and we believe that your decision in the Covault freeholder case says that even if those requirements are unusual, or to use your word from that opinion, foolish when compared with other procedures, the legislature is entitled to prescribe them. Here, of course, many of the deficiencies are far from foolish.
But if the board isn't equipped or authorized to pass on the sufficiency of the signatures and whether they meet statutory requirements or not, isn't that an argument in favor of allowing the district court in making that initial determination to allow amendments which would comply?
Your Honor, it might be if the statute said that you can start over in the district court.
But it says de novo.
It says that the appeal shall be heard de novo. Now, what we think is that does not mean the issues can be entirely reframed so that the freeholder board is rendered a nullity.
Is it de novo on the record from below?
Your opinions actually distinguish between a de novo review and a de novo on the record review. And it appears as though what those opinions express is the thought that your scrutiny level is different from a de novo review. You apparently reweigh the evidence not to see if the decision below is correct, but to make a brand new one all over, which sounds like a de novo on the record review, but there is some distinction drawn in your opinions. I'm not sure it's decisional here, because I think the issue is, did the freeholder board ever acquire jurisdiction since the petitions were defective. If the freeholder board lacked jurisdiction because the petitions were defective, jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, cannot be cured by amendment in the district court.
Well, we agree with that. That's the question.
I think it is.
Yeah, you wouldn't start with your petition directly in the district court. You do have a procedure that you have to go through first.
Right.
And the question is, did they significantly satisfy that procedure in the freeholder?
I don't think there's a substantial compliance criteria to be applied here, but even if we were to apply one, there are six specific listed by number elements in the statute, and in every instance, one of them, a common one, is missing.
What is that?
There is no allegation that either the Hardington District or the Why Not District is a member of a learning community.
Wasn't it impossible for them to be in a learning community at that point in time because the statute wasn't operative?
No, the statute was operative. It had become operative about 3 weeks before their petitioning. So they knew there was a new statute, probably the hottest piece of news in the state. It had become the law. Their petitions did not include the point.
Was there any possibility that these two districts would be in a learning community?
I think it's their burden to tell us that. And so I know, from what I think I know of these two districts, that the allegation would have been simple to make. They could have easily alleged they were not. They did not make that allegation. The legislature required them, whether it was foolish or not, to do so. But that's a small part of our point. The bigger part is we have land that is being transferred here with legal descriptions that don't close, with one of two or three or four owners petitioning, and that petitioning owner not joined by the others, not signing under oath, and we have all of those problems framed by our pleading in the district court, timely taken, and the attempt to cure, Your Honor, is made by an intervener. Your decisions are clear that an intervener cannot intrude into a lawsuit and redefine the issues between the original parties.
But the intervener was the original party and the proceedings before the freeholder board, wasn't it?
That's true. And not a necessary party on appeal.
How could that be?
When we appealed, Your Honor, our appeal was taken against the county assessor and the board. We did not name the landowners. And your decisions appear to us to make it quite clear that they're not necessary parties. There are a number of intervener cases in your jurisprudence. And there are a number of decisions where the landowners don't intervene and are not parties on appeal. The legislature didn't say that, Your Honor. It could have. I suspect if this body were to write the statute would say that. But you have deferred to the legislature by saying that even if it seems foolish, they have plenary authority over the boundaries of school districts.
Let me see if I understand your basic argument. That once you file your action before the freeholder board, if you haven't included all of the prescribed requirements that the legislature has made, you're done.
That's jurisdictional.
Well, that's it.
And you're done. That's right.
So
now, in addition to that, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The practical effect of that is you want this court to go back and look at each petition individually to see if all of those requirements have been met?
Because I didn't know what de novo review really means under your decisions, we attempted to sort those for you in the brief and the appendix you gave us leave to file. I think what you should do is decide this on jurisdictional grounds and reverse it and dismiss it through and through, so none of the property moves. If there wasn't a proper petition, the freeholder board could not approve. If the freeholder board could not approve, the district court cannot approve as long as it's precluded by the absence of jurisdiction. But if there had been an absent fact, that could have been filled in.
Is there any dispute that some piece is missing on every initial petition?
There's no dispute about the learning community point. Most of them are defective two, three, or four ways. They're all defective that way.
Is there any dispute that they're all defective in some respect?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. I believe that's a conceded point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Arroyo, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Your Honor, members of the court, my name is Jeff Haroda, and I'm representing all of the successful freeholders in both of these appeals. Although this seems like a complicated case because of the number of real estate parcels involved, the issue is really very simple, and that is whether a particular parcel of ground owned by a freeholder is entitled to be transferred from the Wyandotte Public School District, a taxing district, to another taxing district, that being the Harlingen Public School Systems. As pointed out by Mr. Domina, the legislature is in control of that transfer, and they have provided a statutory scheme to do that under 79-458. It is our position, of course, that the district court was correct in its determinations and that all the successful freeholders should be entitled to transfer their land because they have complied with the provisions of Section 79-458.
Well, is there authority that the freeholders can correct all their errors made in the board, in the district court, and the district court then to continue once the errors have been corrected or rectified or the prescribed requirements have been met in district court action?
Yes, I think that the statute itself, when it contemplated how the appeal would go forward, provides the answer to that question, and that
is the rationale for going to the freeholder board in the first place.
Well, I think it's because it allows for a initial setting where matters could be dealt with, could be dealt with without the necessity of having to go into court.
What took place in the district court?
Well, what took place in the district court? Well, here's the
appeal.
It was all by appeal.
And then interveners were permitted to put in new petitions and fill in some gaps.
Here's how I look at it. There was a decision.
I'm trying to find out specifically, were the interveners permitted to fill in gaps in their petitions at the district court level? Is that yes?
They were entitled to enter into the appeal process, and then they did file amended petitions or second amended petitions.
Was
that specifically
testimony, or was the remainder on the record made below?
They were actually all new testimony. And there was a stipulation arrived at between the parties that essentially said that instead of having each freeholder come and testify as to the facts setting forth all of the allegations in this statute, it was agreed by stipulation that the facts set forth in the amended petitions that were filed in district court would be used in lieu of or as the live testimony of each freeholder.
Is it undisputed that all petitions were defective in some manner?
I don't believe so.
So you believe some of the petitions were sufficient under 79-458?
Well, the only thing as noted by Mr. Domina was that on the first set of petitions, that would have been at the freeholder board hearing on September 26th of 2006. None of those petitions at that level contained the learning community allegation. And
so my question was, every petition every petition that was filed at the board level was defective, or some that were filed at the board level were proper?
Well, if they all did not contain that learning community allegation at the September of 2006 hearing. Now, the other two hearings, the petitions did have those.
And some were missing other parts.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were some
what do you
issues.
Think are the essential elements of the petition for the board to acquire jurisdiction?
I think just as the statute says, any freeholder can file the petition. It does not say that every person has to file this petition.
But what does the petition have to allege? Are there certain things that have to be in the petition in order for the board to act before?
Well, I think there has to be certain evidence presented to the freeholder board at the freeholder public hearing. And it's our position that that evidence is what's important, not the allegations.
Would a non-signed petition by a freeholder that wasn't acknowledged, would that provide the board with any authority to act on behalf of that freeholder?
I think the only two issues involves jurisdiction would be whether there was a petition filed and whether there was proper notice provided for the freeholder board hearing. And I don't think those are the two issues involved.
Does the petition have to have something in it?
Yeah.
Well, what does it have to have in it?
Well, the petition by statute has to have those allegations in it.
So are those jurisdictional requirements?
I would say the, to give the board the authority to transfer the real estate, the board has to find that those elements exist as of the freeholder board. That is correct. Now, the way they use it...
In the freeholder board, none of the petitions alleged that they were learning community?
At the one meeting on September 26th, that is correct. They just didn't have it in there.
So the petition alleged just generally that all statutory requirements are met for moving the land from one district to another. Do you think that would be enough to satisfy the statute as to the sufficiency of the pleading?
You know, I would think it would be if the evidence that showed that the high schools were 15 miles apart, that they were class 3 districts, that there was the override levy, if all of that evidence came out at the public hearing in front of the freeholder board, so they can make that factual determination that the elements do exist, then they have the authority to transfer.
Your argument would be even if the petition is missing parts, you can cure it by evidence.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, what happened, the way I look at it is three things happened after the notice of appeal was filed with the freeholder board. And the way the rules look, as I understand it, the number one thing is that freeholder board's decision was vacated. Zip, it was done. The next thing is that under the In re Cobalt decision, the freeholders, who were the only necessary parties in this particular case, had the right and had the responsibility to present the petition once again in the district court as a trial de novo.
And so then if the parties object, it's more like a demur that says, well, your petition doesn't state a cause of action, and then the trial court or the district court can give leave to amend and assert the additional allegations that would then formulate a cause of action.
Absolutely. You know, and I would go back, oh, excuse me.
I'm sorry, is the freeholder board equipped to do that sort of thing?
Well, the statute's not very clear about...
From the freeholder board, was it?
Yeah, there was never any evidence or contrary evidence provided at the freeholder board that I'm aware of, that any of the facts are wrong.
Yeah, whether this is de novo on a record or is this de novo like a small claims appeal.
Well, see, that's the way I look on it, that's the way I think it's clear that it is like a small claims appeal. It gives the freeholders, I think that what the statute does is it first of all provides for a simple administrative method transferring real estate in cases where there's no real contest, nobody's objecting. Secondly, it gives judicial review and a judicial handling of any case that might be controversial and allows taxpayers then to make sure through a district court proceeding that all of the allegations in the petitions are in fact supported by evidence. And I think In re Cobalt clearly indicates that in the fact that it says it's literally a new trial, a new proceeding, and even more importantly than that, Cobalt says that you have to use the evidence, not the petition allegations, but the evidence as it exists on the date that the trial is held in district court. That's the exact ruling of Cobalt, because in that case, the petition was correct in the freeholder board level that said that the one school district was not accredited.
So in your view, it kind of doesn't matter what happened at the board. It's a complete do-over.
Correct.
At the district court.
That's what I would, that's the way I would
like
would review it.
Like a small claims analysis.
Absolutely. And of course that brings me up to another point that I came across just as I was preparing for this argument, and that is how, if anyway, the recent decision of the court in In re Ulmer, you know, relates to this standard of review as you are determining today, because that case seems strikingly similar to the situation we have here. And
you have to compare the statutes of 79-458 and trying to recall
the... Yeah, the Ulmer one is under the general appeal if nothing is provided for, the 25-1937.
Is it on your request to intervene, is that discretionary with the court to allow people to intervene in the case if they have an interest in the subject matter?
There's some confusion in this case about this petition to intervene because the appeal, first of all, notified only the freeholder board. I mean, It did not talk, and it did not notify the freeholders. They're the ones that are wanting their land transferred. The freeholder board has no interest in whether or not the land is transferred. It is the freeholder members, the board members, or not the board members, the individuals. And the problem we have is, the problem that the district court had when it first took up this case was, how do we let these people know that their case has been appealed? So that they can participate in this trial de novo, because it's their responsibility as freeholders to present the evidence anew in the district court to establish that the criteria in 79-458 is in fact present so their land can be transferred. They have to be there. Nobody's going to present evidence for them. They have to get in there. And so what the district court devised was a method of telling them they have to intervene if they want to participate in, you know, and proceed in this appeal. It was a way to get them involved. And I see my time is up. So,
your time is up. Thank you, indeed. How much time do we have for rebuttal?
A minute and 3 seconds.
A minute and 3 seconds, Mr.
Donovan. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, 2 points. First, the statute says shall. The petition shall be signed under oath by each petitioner, and it shall contain certain elements. One way that a person can be a petitioner under this statute is to be in possession of land for which a patent has not yet issued. I point that out to you because this statute and its predecessors has been a part of the substantive law of this state since 1869. And almost biennially, the legislature of this state has revisited this subject. It has never vested the courts of this state with the authority to ignore or marginalize the freeholder board, which is precisely what the appellees here would have this court do. They would have this court conclude that the freeholder board means nothing. And, Your Honor, I think the freeholder board is equipped to look at a petition and see whether it's signed by every title holder, because it can compare against the tax records. It can see if there's a notary that has an oath on it, and it can count the elements. Thank you very much.
Thank you.